is a production of Cornell University.
So go ahead and call this meeting to order. October 6, 2014, the third meeting of the Graduate Professional Student Assembly. We begin, as always, with a roll call of the voting members. So starting with Physical Sciences, Jeffrey. Andreas is here. I'm here. Catherine's here. Humanities, Jesse Goldberg.
Here.
Christy Schlaroff.
Here.
Christine.
Here.
Social Sciences, Paul Berry.
Here.
William Nicholson.
Here.
Todd Snyder.
Here.
Lynn Zhu.
Here.
Biological Sciences, Cora Best. Andy V. Finley. Ian Small. Humanities are good. Professional Schools, John Belays. Alexander Thompson.
Here.
And finally, Masters, Ashley Jones. And Erwin Roberts. Okay. So, moving on then, will be the approval of the minutes from the last meeting from September 22nd. Are there any corrections to the minutes which were sent out?
Yes. Under where I gave a presentation, I'd like to strike out two lines.
Okay.
There's no increasing resolution, so I'd like to strike out that line, like the second line of that section.
Okay. Do you have one second while we get ten? Okay. So, sorry, which line again?
Strike out the second line.
Okay.
There was no increase in tuition.
There was
no. Strike out the final line of the lower cost of tuition to match tuition of grade.
Okay. Okay. So, with those two corrections?
One, just saying that in your business, the group of providers. In the second paragraph?
In which sentence in the second paragraph?
First sentence, second paragraph.
Oh, I see it. Okay. Okay, so there's that. Any further corrections? Okay. Is there a motion to approve the minutes with those corrections? Okay.
Seconded.
Okay, we will vote by vote by affirmation. So, are there any opposed? All right. Seeing no opposition, then the motion will pass, and the minutes are approved as corrected. So, from there, then we'll go right into presentations. First, we have Dean Newth, who is here to talk to us about the procedures for graduate student injuries.
Thank you, Richard, for the invitation. I'm Dean Newth, and I'm Vice Provost at the University of Graduate School, so thank you for inviting me. I am here to talk with you and follow up to some degree about the action that has been taken since last year when GPSA passed Resolution 9, which was dealing specifically, that Resolution 9 focused specifically on work-related injuries or illness. After that resolution was passed, the graduate school constituted a task force and broadened the examination that task force would do on graduate and professional student injuries to consider not only work-related injuries as specified in the resolution, but to focus on injuries to any graduate or professional student. And what we did coming out that task force was to develop and post a list of procedures for graduate and professional student injuries. You can find those of you who have computers or if you want to link to it. On our graduate school webpage, there's a link for policies, and then under policies, you'll find graduate student injuries. And so if you click on graduate student injuries, you'll come to a description of the procedures for handling graduate student injuries. So what I'd like to do is just briefly summarize what those procedures are so that we have a common basis for discussion. I'll let you know what's new, so what didn't exist before these procedures were posted, and then we can have some discussion. So to summarize the procedures for graduate student injuries, the students that are addressed through this graduate student injury procedures are registered graduate professional students at Cornell, and that includes students who are in absentia. So if you're registered fully or registered in absentia, these procedures apply to you. They don't apply to students who are on leave from the university, whether it's a personal leave or a health leave of absence. So at the time of injury, you need to be a registered student. And the injury must have occurred either on university property or during participation in a university-sponsored activity or while performing responsibilities associated with an assistantship or while on an hourly appointment from the university. So the idea is that these are university injury procedures, so you have to, one, be registered, and then secondly, when you incurred your injury, it needed to be related to your affiliation with the university. So essentially that's what that says. The procedures then indicate that after a student has attained the immediate medical attention that would be needed for an injury situation, the student should fill out, just as anybody who's injured at Cornell should fill out, a university injury report form. And I'll say a few words about that in a moment. So when that injury report form is filled out then, that report form will trigger notification of a number of different offices. Those offices include the Graduate School Office of Student Life. So Assistant Dean Jana LeMay will be notified when somebody files an injury report that's noted that person is a graduate professional student. Also notified will be Environmental Health and Safety, which administers the injury report system, so they're denotified. Also, Medical Leave Administration and the Workers' Compensation Office within Medical Leave Administration will be notified, and Risk Management, the Office of Risk Management will be notified. And then after those offices are notified, there will be a process that's undertaken by Jana LeMay, the assistant dean in the graduate school, to identify whether that student is registered in the graduate school or registered in a professional school. If registered in a professional school, she'll engage the appropriate assistant or associate dean from the professional school. If a graduate school student, she'll be the support person and will reach out to that student and ask if the student needs any assistance contacting resources, disability services, for example, or interacting with their faculty advisor or their special committee or their director of graduate studies, depending on the severity of injury and the amount of time that recovery will take. So Jana is there as your advocate to work with you and interact with you in that capacity to try and make sure that all the resources across campus are brought to bear on this. For those students who are injured outside of performing assistantship duties or outside of an hourly paid position, their medical coverage would be determined by their health insurance coverage, whether it's Cornell student health insurance or something else. When students are receiving financial support through assistantship or while on an hourly paid appointment and they're injured in the course of acting within the scope of their assistantship or their hourly paid appointment, those injuries may be deemed compensable under New York State workers' compensation. And so there is a process by which Cornell University Workers' Compensation Office will take a look at the case and and then we'll send their opinion to the Workers' Compensation Board. The student has an opportunity to submit information to the Workers' Compensation Board, and then the New York State Workers' Compensation Board will ultimately make a judgment about whether that injury is indeed compensable by workers' compensation. And if it is compensable, what will be both the short-term and the long-term financial implications and other implications of that. So those procedures are laid out, and you can look at those in more detail. What's new about this is that, for one, these procedures are now codified and available publicly. And that had not been done in the past. So that was, I think, a very positive outcome of this resolution, so that everybody can find these. And everybody, meaning not just students, but also support offices across campus. That's another component that's new here, is that now we have alerted and have on board the various support offices so that they too know how and when they would be contacted in case of graduate student injury to help support a student. The other piece that's new is that with the injury report form, while the injury report form has existed on the Environmental Health and Safety website for a long, long time, there was not a category specifically for graduate professional students. And so therefore, since there wasn't a category for that, it was difficult to trigger notification of the appropriate offices across campus. So that injury report form has been modified, so it has a specific category now for graduate professional students, and that then will trigger JANLMA and or the professional school and other offices on campus being notified so that support structures can be rallied into place. The other piece that's new in this is kind of implied by Jana's role is that she will, as a matter of course, notify for every graduate professional student injury. She'll notify, as I said, the professional school if it's a professional school student. She'll also notify University Health Services, Gannett, so that Gannett has a heads up that a student may be out there if that student hasn't contacted them yet. And also notify through the Dean of Students Office the crisis manager, so that the crisis manager for the university has, again, a heads up that this student, depending on the severity of the injury, may need additional support. So there's an additional level of notification to offices, again, that can support students. So I think I'll stop there and ask for comments or questions or discussion.
Okay. So, thank you, Dean Newth, for that summary of the work from the working group. So now, are there any comments, questions for Dean Newth?
Well, so you mentioned that you're covered under duties in the course of your assistantship, but what would the procedure be if someone's like funded on like an NSF fellowship and they're funded for a TA ship, but or their dissertation work, they're working in a lab, but it's not directly how they compensate.
So again, if you're on an hourly appointment or if you're on an assistantship, you may be deemed eligible for workers' compensation coverage. You would go through these processes. If you're not on an hourly appointment and if you're not supported by an assistantship, then it would be your student health insurance that would provide the medical coverage.
Sorry, just to follow up on that though, like, so if you're funded, say, as a PA, but you work in a lab and you're injured in the lab, are you covered?
Again, if it's not related to your assistantship duties.
So it's only if injured in the course of your assistantship duties, are you covered at all?
No, if you would have coverage through student health insurance. Workers' compensation is related to duties that are done directly in service while being paid for those duties directly in service to the university. So that's where interpretation comes in, and that's where the Workers' Compensation Board would make a determination about eligibility. It's ultimately, in every case, the Workers' Compensation Board that has the authority and the right to make a determination about eligibility.
Are there some instances where the university will voluntarily provide support to students injured in not in the PHRA faculty. Is that codified in any way in the documents, or is that kind of a
what the language is, and I'll read it to you, so that may help you. Let's see, the university may assist with urgent temporary financial assistance to students depending on the student's specific context. For example, a need for temporary housing relocation associated with a campus residence hall fire in which the student is injured and the apartment is left uninhabitable. So again, just in all of these situations, in all of these cases, it really depends on the context. To Nicole's question, the Workers' Compensation Board will look at the context of a particular student injury and will make a determination about that context and what's eligible. In a situation where a student is injured and has health insurance and is having difficulty making the copay, for example, with health insurance, that may be a context in which the university would provide additional support, but that's not guaranteed through this procedure, no.
Other questions? So before the laws were codified, and I'm very happy to hear that they happened, if a graduate student was injured in a lock, say, then their health insurance would cover whatever it costs up to a certain point according to the insurance policy. So now there's this difference of the graduate students that are TAs in COVID, and now we just choose to know what the ratio of graduate students who are just working in the lab have a research assistant versus those that are being paid for the hourly wages.
So when we think about doctoral students, very few doctoral students are paid on an hourly basis. Roughly, these are very rough numbers, but roughly a third of doctoral students are on teaching assistantships, a third on research assistantships, and a third on fellowships at any point in time, roughly.
Hi, so for the workers' compensation, do you have to be a New York resident, or do you have to be a U.S. citizen? Can international students also get compensation through the New York Workers' Compensation Body?
So the New York Workers' Compensation Board makes a determination, again, would look at whether a student is holding an assistantship appointment at the time or is an hourly paid person. And would make a determination. So if an international student has an hourly appointment or an assistantship appointment, under New York State law, if the Workers' Compensation Board judges that the injury occurred while in service to the university, then yes, that person would be eligible.
In some instances, they might be, they point out college sponsored fellowships, others not eligible.
Fellowship, the student on a fellowship does not have duties associated with that fellowship other than to be making academic progress. So that, we believe, would not be deemed eligible by the Workers' Compensation Board. But again, it's up to the Workers' Compensation Board to make that determination ultimately. Well, let me go behind you.
First, thank you for all the information you have on the website. Thank you for your time. Are all injury reports, are all injury reports fully coordinated by the company, or are some gaps before they got to get there and deemed by the university of indicate, or do all of them get there and then?
Right. So no, not all injury reports would be forwarded, because there would be injury reports if the student is not on an hourly appointment and if the student is not on an assistantship appointment, those would not be forwarded to the Workers' Compensation Board. The others would be with commentary from Cornell. However, and this gets, I think, to the fellowship question that was asked. So if that fellowship student believed that he or she was eligible under workers' compensation, that student then would apply to the Workers' Compensation Board directly, and the Workers' Compensation Board would examine that case. But our understanding is that unless you're appointed on an assistantship and injured in the course of doing activities associated with that assistantship or on an hourly appointment, Workers' Compensation Board would not deem you eligible, and so those cases are not forwarded directly. Yes?
Is that a definition of codified item one duty of that predatory position mean? For example, if someone going to office or that human that might have got injured while going to and from office, does that count as duty or?
Again, there's lots of hypotheticals, you know, and different different range of activities. If it's truly related to the assistantship duties, the interpretation of the university would most likely be that is associated with that assistantship. So let me really don't want to get into hypotheticals. So let me give you an example. So somebody has a teaching assistantship in chemistry. And in the course of setting up the lab for chemistry experiments to be conducted in a class, something goes awry and he or she sustains a burn. Likely that would be forwarded with endorsement to the compensation board. What if that same person was setting up the same experiment and doing it on a Saturday morning to impress his girlfriend? That likely would not be covered. Even though the student at the time held an assistantship, that student was not setting up the lab in order to teach the class. That student was setting up the lab for an extraneous extracurricular activity. So in that case, that would not be an activity associated with the assistantship. Yes?
My understanding is that workers' compensation covers like lost wages. If you got injured and then you had to be home for like an extended period of time, that's correct, right?
So what it covers, and I can just tell you a little bit about this. So all medical expenses, including out-of-pocket expenses, are typically covered if deemed eligible for workers' compensation. There's a short-term stipend replacement for up to a 13-week period at 100% of the current stipend level. And then long-term stipend compensation would be determined by the workers' compensation judge according to a schedule of benefits that the workers' compensation board has established.
So my question is, because students are on fellowship and would be deemed not eligible for workers' compensation, is there some sort of mechanism for them to get stipend replacement if they have to go off their fellowship?
That would be looked at in each particular student case in the context of that case and the determination made. And that may be a situation where fellowship might be continued, but that's not guaranteed for a certain number of weeks like you would have under a workers' compensation board eligible kind of injury.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
How long, on average, do you know, does it take for the workers to make a decision on their claim?
So I don't know the details of that. I know that they have some very specific deadlines. So once a person who is injured files a claim with the Workers' Compensation Board and provides all the information needed for the Workers' Compensation Board to make its judgment, essentially has submitted a full claim, there's a certain number of days that the judge has to make a determination within, and I don't know offhand if that's a 30 or 60 day window, but it's something like that.
Does the graduate student have a person who will help them make a claim, like for fill out all the forms correctly and make sure that the process goes through?
So there's a workers' compensation office at Cornell, and that office can provide guidance.
So we'll have one more question since we're getting up to time limit.
Follow up on that, is there a timeline for the university process before something goes to the workers' compensation board? How long do you
The internal university process for getting assistance to the students is as immediately as we can. So as soon as, so this is all electronic, so as soon as the injury report is filed, electronically, JANA and risk management and workers' compensation and environmental health and safety are automatically notified. There is a goal to move all of those considerations forward as fast as possible, but again, it depends on the particular context, and I know that that's probably not satisfying to hear that it is context-dependent, but in truth it is. Different injuries and different cases have different levels of complexity.
Okay. So, okay, last question.
I'm kind of curious, when this resolution was passed last year, we were told kind of unequivocally that graduate students were not covered under workers' compensation. And I was curious if you would speak a little bit about what changed.
I think nothing changed. I think that was erroneous information. And what has changed is that everybody now has a better understanding of what the procedures ought to be.
So let's thank Dean Newth for coming to talk to us on Skype Community. So up next we'll have Kevin Sunderland, who's from the Mayor's Office for the City of Ithaca, and he's going to talk to us, I believe, about the proposed parking plan. Sure. If you have a laptop or...
I just have a quick presentation.
Sure.
Hi everyone, my name is Kevin Sutherland. I'm the Chief of Staff in the Mayor's Office for the City of Ithaca. I was brought on last December, so I'm just a year in, so if you've got questions about things much before that, I can't help you. What I do know is I've been living in Ithaca for 7 years, and I've been very disappointed in the odd-even parking rules that exist for 6 months out of the year in the City of Ithaca. And when I was brought on, the Mayor asked me to create a task force to look into it. We spent about 4 months meeting with a handful of staff as well as elected officials, Steve Smith, who is a college town representative, and Seth Murtaugh, who is a downtown representative, sat on this group as well. What I did is I created a quick PowerPoint presentation where I did four community forums. They were in June, so it wasn't when students were around, and they were so gracious to let me come and talk to you guys and try to see if I could get some support, get some ideas, how do I move this forward, what's missing, what can be added, so on and so forth. So I'll just go through the quick presentation that I came up with, and I sent the actual report that the group came up with, and Catherine, I think you'll send off if you haven't already. So the current program, it goes from November 1st to April 1st. There's no parking on odd-numbered side of all city streets on the odd-numbered day of the month between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. So the night before, you have to remember that tomorrow is the odd day or the even day, and don't park on that side of the street. That's confusing. Snow Watch Crew, it's a voluntary schedule. We've reduced the number of staff we have in our DPW department. So we have to become more strategic about how we take care of the roads in the wintertime, especially. And so it's only currently consists of four crew members, and its height is around 8. So this means that during a significant snowfall, work on the flats doesn't get done because the hills have to be taken care of first. They have to be plowed and salted. This also means there's no time for ice scraping with a grader when odd even parking is in effect. There's a 4-hour window in which we have to move all the snow, which isn't even feasible for our current staffing levels. Because after 6 o'clock, as commuters come in, both people who work and people who come to school, take up the other side of the street because there's no, you can park anywhere at that point. So for about 6 weeks, starting April 1st, we have two dedicated DPW staff who walk around the city in a planned map and post signs. So they take, they literally all day, they're either posting the signs, they're writing on the new sign, or they're taking out old signs to say, don't park here for these days so we can do a lot of the street cleaning and basic street repair that we need to do. So we lose two staff members for a 6 week period, and sometimes it goes into seven or eight depending on incidents that occur and we can't get to those streets. So after the 6 weeks, there's still 5.5 months when the parking regulation is not in effect and there is parking on both sides of the street. Again, if we're going to do any work on that road, we're going to have to post it, we're going to have to make people move their cars and eat up staff time to put those signs up. For additional cleaning and road maintenance or repair, crews have to post each side of the street 24 hours in advance. And when the vehicle has been left in a spot labeled no parking, additional staff time is necessary to take pictures and stay there until a police officer comes and actually writes the ticket. So additional staff time and a tow truck arrives. That's our current model. So the task force came up with three phases. Phase one is what we're trying to look at implementing now. And this would be on once a week on any given street, no parking from 4 a.m. to 4 p.m. Not an entire length of street, but a block of a street. And it might be two blocks, but mostly at any given time, you'd be able to find parking within a four block radius. Because you're going from half of the streets not being available in a four block radius to three quarters of the streets available. The idea would be, roughly one fifth of the city is not available for parking versus half the city currently. During major snow events, the mayor or the superintendent of public works can declare a parking ban on all major arterial roads and if it is deep the streets. And finally, the city would encourage residents to park in the city parking garages during those snow events or ice events to incentivize that a discount would be created. So we're trying to help get cars off of the street, especially during emergency or major snow events. This would allow our current DPW staff to be as efficient as they possibly can, and hopefully will help educate the community about what our parking rules are. Because currently, the odd even parking lot signs, the only time you see them is when you're actually coming into the city. There's one sign, that's it. So if you're going 30 miles an hour, you're not even going to see that sign as you pass by it. So what we will do with that also is to put signs in on our streets that specify, you know, this street is a Monday, this street is a Tuesday, so on and so forth. Phase two would be removal of the 24-hour parking regulation. Currently, in addition to that odd-even parking, our regulations say that you can't park on anywhere for more than 24 hours. Not very well enforced, I'll give you that. We don't have the crews to do it. Usually the only time we do it is when there's a complaint. So under this rule, if every street only once a week has no parking, you're forced to move your car once a week you have to move your car. Therefore, we could take away the 24-hour parking and you'd be able to leave your car there for a week. I believe that would help reduce greenhouse gas emissions issues or concerns in the community, especially when they, you know, celebrate it so much. And phase three, utilization of the license plate recognition technology. LPR, you'll hear that term a lot. We have a new parking director. He's big on this. Again, we have a very small staff to be able to deal with parking issues. So he's actually gone through and gotten these license plate recognition. So if you leave your car in one spot for too long, they drive by, they see it, they take a picture of your license plate, they take a picture of the stem of your tire. So it's essentially how they chalk it. So wherever your stem is, they spin back 2 hours later. It's in a 2 hour zone or a 24 hour zone that's currently signed. And they see that the car hasn't moved, they can write you a ticket because they're using your tire stub. So if you want to learn something today, and the reason you all can't roll your car up about a foot, you're fine. So with the full 12 hours, so that I would say 4 a.m. to 4 p.m. So 4 in the morning when our crews are coming in, they'd be able to work till 4 p.m. So they'd have a whole day to work on that street. And therefore, if you're somebody who lives in the city and you're coming back, let's say you work outside and you're coming back, and you go to park, you'll be able to park back on your street that night because it's after 4 p.m. when our crews are done. So with a full 12 hours, and the streets clear of vehicles, our crews will be more efficient in cleaning streets and clearing snow. Enforcement will be more consistent, efficient, and effective. And this frees up DPW time that was previously spent on just putting signs in the ground. When I learned that, it blew my mind. We're losing staff time to just put signs in the ground. We can do an after-school program with elementary kids to do that. So where do we go from here? I did the community meetings. I had four of them in total. I brought them to city administration to discuss. The resolution got drafted, but it halted when it got to city administration committee because of the concerns that the 20 people, I'm telling you, the total of 20 people came to four meetings. There was one woman who came to all four of them. There was another gentleman who came to two of them. It's the same group of people who just don't like change, and I couldn't move this idea any further forward. So I went to the Undergraduate Student Association or Assembly.
Assembly.
Thank you. So I went to them. They drafted a resolution and approved it. So what we've decided to do is try to look at the fourth ward, which is College Town and down the hill a bit, doing a pilot program to see if this will work. Because there still is that concern of, okay, well, if you're going to close the street off for 12 hours during a day, is that really going to cause more congestion, more issues with parking? Or is it, you know, going to help out? So DPW crews are interested in trying this. Including that council member, Steve Smith, is as well. So I think that's the next step. It's not going to, and of course, because we're now closing in on the snow and the cold, getting signs on the ground is not going to happen between now and, you know, next week. I'm sorry, it's not going to snow next week, but a little later than that. I think we'll try to roll this out for next year. We'll look at trying to put resolutions through in March or April. But I wanted to bring it to this group. I wanted you guys to be aware of it. It does affect you, and I would love to hear any questions or comments or ideas you might have.
Right. So, thank you, Kevin. Questions?
My question is, how are you going to notify people of which streets are closed when I made that?
Signs in the ground.
Just signs in the ground?
Yeah, there's an upfront cost related to that. And in the report, I think it's around $150,000. That's for the whole city. So if we just do one ward, it's going to probably cost us about $30,000 or $40,000.
So it would be like my street might close down, but like it would be on local time, which day of the month or whatever.
You got it.
Okay, cool.
Go ahead.
Two questions. So first, I can see how this is going to save the 6 weeks of temporary signposting each year. I'm curious about how much, is that going to actually, what are those 6 weeks going to be spent on? How much is that actually going to help about clearing roads after a major snowfall event versus just having better regular maintenance during the six-week period?
So that six-week period is in the spring, when we typically, the snow is gone, hopefully gone. Those crew members could be put back to actually paving roads, which is our big effort in 2015. And we're actually we have more money in our budget for next year to try to get some of that done. I've been applying for grants left and right to try to get additional federal and state money in to fix our roads, because it's been the easy thing to whack when budgets got bad, because asphalt doesn't cry.
The other question is, I get the sense that you're asking us to pass a resolution. Are there going to be future town hall meetings that you want us to sort of muster support for? How much good is a graduate student assembly at Cornell's resolution actually going to do in terms of getting through the city assembly or administration?
So that's a good point. A resolution isn't necessary, but if I reach out to your leadership here and ask them to reach out to you folks when there is a meeting, if people come to it and speak positively or constructively versus what I typically get at these meetings, I think it would be very beneficial.
I'm curious about the arterial road situation. How would you know if you are on an arterial road? Because that to me would also include, for example, all of the main roads in College Town, et cetera, which are high demand for parking, but also some main strips in downtown as well, where I think a lot of aggression actually lives.
So those snow emergency routes would also be labeled along with the sign to say this is a snow emergency route in the event of a snow emergency. So one of the things we'll do is, and you know, this is me thinking about technology and how that can really help us. If you volunteer your number, we will text you when there's a snow emergency, or we will even use our license plate recognition. We won't give you a ticket. We'll give you a half an hour or an hour or whatever we come up with in the policy that says, we'll robocall you and tell you you need to move your car off this major arterial road through the snow event. You have a half an hour before we ticket. So we can use technology. I mean, this is, it's a balance between what needs to get done and helping people who live here and work here, and you know, we have to figure out that right balance. So yeah, it's very important that people know, okay, you're parking on a place where if there's a bunch of snow that falls, we gotta take care of it and get you off the road. So it's definitely in the forefront.
So I think we'll stick to one more question.
Yes, there are still arterial roads that have to be cleared, and typically you just get ticketed and towed.
Okay. So let's thank Kevin again for coming to the talk.
Oh, and if you do have any questions or ideas or comments, my email is ksutherland@cityofithaca.org, and I'd love to hear from you. Thank you.
Okay. Last presentation of the day will be from Nate, who wants to talk to us about the Bear Walk and the President's Council on Hazing Prevention. So I believe he sent me some slides, if I can find them again. This is a problem when you work with a much larger monitor. Hold on. Okay, there we go.
Okay, guys, I'll try to be quick. I'm not sure how many of you have heard about this, and I'll explain why in a second. But this is the Bear Walk. We did this back, it was August 28th, I think. It's the first Thursday after school started. And it was kind of a big thing. Can we go to the next slide?
Yes.
What this is I kind of describe it as like a reverse trick or treat. And so we have all kinds of people from all parts of Cornell and the good community. And we have teams of about four people, and we kind of take bags of goodies to people's houses, and we knock on the door, and we chat with them for a little bit. We provide some resources, like how to park in work in Ithaca. We talk to trash tags. We talk about board safety, kind of different things. And we try to be very intentional, very specific about the information we gave them, and generally just trying to be, how can we be better neighbors for each other? We visited permanent residents, we visited a lot of students, we were focusing in College Town this past year, because this is the first year we've ever done it, and we're going to expand a little bit more in the coming years. It's modeled after a walk that's similar, that goes on at Penn State, which has grown really large and become really successful. And the whole purpose is just about making community connections within the community, both with the residents, meeting whether that's common council members, or Cornell staff members or students or whoever or the police, and then the people on the team interacting as well is just as important. So as you can see here, we have some of the photos of like some different groups that were going around. So the one on the left here is there's Kathy Zoner, she got a back turn, but we had a lot of Cornell police were out there too, just chatting with people. Let's go to the next slide. So we have the mayor came out, and there's President Sorkin, and we got mayor did a selfie with some students, and that went up on Twitter. So we had some things going on. There were a lot of students, mostly undergrads from the student assembly, including myself. I'm only able to muster 4 graduate students. So I'm looking for some people. I know because I got pulled onto this project right as school was ending, so kind of everyone just like disappeared into the woodwork over the summer. So I'm giving you a heads up. We're going to do this again at approximately the same time next year, and I'll probably come back to talk about it again. And I'd like to see our numbers go a little bit better. We did have plenty of students. The students were taking the lead on the conversations when we approached people on the porches. And so that was really important. The number one thought that was pretty important. You can see some of the other members of staff, staff members from Cornell, city officials. My group, I had Greg McGonigal. He's a common council member. I had Bev, she's a police officer, and I had Steve, he's a student who does something with the Greek letters, and I can't remember. But they were all really nice, and I had a great time talking with them, made some good connections. And most of the people, so this box over here, a lot of people met the folks on their team, the people they'd never met before, and a lot of people stay in contact. I stay in contact with like Greg McGonigal now. I think some of the stuff that's happened in the city is really interesting, fascinating, and relevant, and we don't get that a lot. So that was an idea from Kevin today, too. So if you're interested in stuff like that, this is a way to make some good connections. Next slide. So the question is always, like, what kind of impact does stuff like this have? There's going to be a report coming out on October 10th that Laura Sanchez-Cross is putting together. I was hoping she'd have it done for today, and she didn't. But here's some preliminary information, some feedback that people gave. The city officials enjoyed it, the staff, some Cornell students. I mean, it's a tourist conference, but it's still, I feel like I definitely made some really valuable connections. And then the residents is something I haven't heard a lot about, heard a lot back with. They're having, again, like a community meeting to discuss some of the deep reasons. But the residents I talked to, I think this comment is representative that, that they did really appreciate the effort that you're out there and you're trying to connect with the current residents who've lived in the community for 20 years, and they feel like their space has just changed. Next slide. So if you want more information about what happened this past year, Laura Sam Cross is how to, we'll be finishing that report hopefully this week. If you'd like to participate in the walk coming in 2015, then I'll have more information in the spring. You can email me. And then if you are super gung-ho about it, I think this is really awesome, and you'd like to help organize this, Julie Page is really the force behind this, and she would be a great person to get in contact with. She's done a phenomenal job of taking something that's never existed before and really presenting to a big organization. Yeah, and I think that's my last slide. Yes, and I wanted to mention the Council on Feeding Prevention. So that's something that's fairly new. It's hazing, I think, is typically seen as more of an undergraduate student problem, particularly in the fraternities and sororities, and that's definitely where they've kind of started their focus. And now the President's Council is expanding to kind of encompass like the entire Cornell community. And so if you are interested, there is a position available for a GPSA representative, and you are basically the connection between the graduate student population and the efforts of the hazing prevention on campus. It's not a lot of work. It's mostly kind of like some communication stuff. They provide free pizza at every meeting, which is good. And they're actually having the next meeting tomorrow from 4:45 to 6:15 in the Hall of Fame room, which I think is like Friendship Hall. It's like next to near the stadium. If you're interested, you can email me or talk to me after our meeting tonight. And there will be free pizza at that meeting. It's super laid back. Feel free to just show up and say, hey, you know, write your company name. And it's really cool. So,
nice.
All right. Any questions real quick? Cool.
All right. Thank you, Nate. Okay, so next we'll move into reports from officers and committee updates. So from the executive committee, I will say no updates. Operations staffing, Drea is unfortunately not with us today, so I'm sure we will hear from her soon. Appropriations?
No.
Communications?
No.
Finance Commission. Advocacy. Faculty awards. For Diversity International Students, she is not here, but there was an update. Basically, she's spoken with Chavez. It's a very long update. So she's come up with some ideas for a Let's Talk series, basically, to try and actually implement those and use the funds which were available, with a couple of, and talking about a couple reports on quantitative study for climate diversity and qualitative study for climate diversity at Cornell, student experiences. Basically, that's what we have. It's a rather long update.
She does say that she wants students to attend a dinner tonight.
Yes.
Just make that up.
Yeah.
So if anyone is interested, her email is up there.
Yes. Her email is up there. Get in touch with her, please. If you would like to get involved with the diversity committee, and they're always looking for new people to help join them. Okay. And finally, programming board.
Lucy's at 6, but if the zombie lurch happens, it will be in very soon, like the same week as our next meeting. So if you're interested in joining the zombie lurch, it's a huge success last year. Keep an ear to the ground or an eye out or whatever your favorite metaphor is, because when it gets announced, it might be very rapid.
Okay.
There is our first meeting for the programming board taking place this Wednesday. Only a couple of floors upstairs. Five thirty Wednesday upstairs, fourth floor library conference room, and we will be talking about a potential zombie epidemic.
Okay. So, next, we have a resolution which we sent out, which I don't have a copy of. Do you grab it? Okay. Basically, resolution 3 will be. Okay. Just kidding, I do have it. Resolution 3 is just a welcome invitation to President Elizabeth Garrett. It was sent out along with the meeting announcement, and we have some printouts here if you'd like to read through it. Basically, what this is just kind of a warm welcome to the new president, informing her of the GPSA, who we are, what we do, inviting her to participate in shared governance, and also plugging the GPCI initiative so that she's aware of it and can, you know, ideally start reading through it and looking how she can help us. More likely scenario, she'll be aware of it and know what kinds of issues we might bring up with her in the future. So I'll open the floor now to any comments or amendments to the resolution.
I'd like to propose an amendment.
Okay.
Rather, for the bundled amendment with a series of small and inconsequential changes, I fully support welcoming Beth to the community. But let's do so well. Starting at the top, line one, I move for capitalizing the word incoming. Line three, adding a semicolon to the end of the first whereas clause.
Hold on, just to be, very formal, let's track the changes.
Yep.
Okay, so sorry, what was that?
Line three, just adding a semicolon to the end of the first whereas clause. Line seven, adding a semicolon to the end of the third whereas clause. End of line 8, adding a comma to the last whereas, at the end of the last whereas clause. Line 9, capitalizing the P in president. This one I'm not sure, I don't know if the people have feelings about newly elected versus incoming in the title, but let's make that part of the amendment. Let's change the newly elected with incoming. Line 10, the anti-penultimate word, removing the S from the end of, now it's the last word, excuse me, removing the S from systems, shared government systems, we just call it a single system in line 7. Line 11, adding a semicolon to the end. Line 13, adding a semicolon to the end. and line 16, adding a period to the end. That ends this amendment.
Okay. All right. So, that amendment is now on the floor. Are there any comments, or is there a motion to approve the amendment? Okay, is there a second? Okay, we will approve by unanimous consent. Are there any objections to the amendment, not the resolution itself? Okay, hearing none, then that is, then we will accept all those changes, because remember how to use words, and there. Okay, are there any further amendments?
One more.
We will assume that that was part of the previous amendment.
We also have newly elected words. Line 13 is a line newly elected.
Oh Jesus. Okay. Now, are there any further amendments?
I'd like to suggest the position of a clause after the indications for when the care can be taken. Just have a clause after that, same thing to affect that be resolved that we specifically invite her to come and talk to us once presented the way that the important is.
Okay.
Word it better than that.
Did we say once per year, once per semester? Once per semester.
Can you invite her?
Okay. Be it further resolved, the incoming president, Elizabeth Garrett, is invited to address graduate professional student assembly once per semester. Anyone want to include something like just as her predecessor did, or? Okay. Continuing the president established.
Can we just say
president
Gordon?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So, are there any comments or discussion on this amendment? Is there a motion to approve the amendment? Yes, sorry.
At least once per semester, fine, well, if there were additional reasons for the president to go to the temple, would want to return
to the
student. Yeah, it might be
interpreted
that she's
done it by the Okay. Don't want to hear from her that much. Okay. Yes, but we will consider this amendment first, and then we'll go back to other corrections such as that. I don't know her middle name, so we'll stick to David. Ah, oh, God. All right. Consistency. Okay. There's a space, isn't there? Yeah, there's a space, just doesn't look like it. Okay. Any other further discussion on this amendment or amendments to the amendment? Okay.
To approve the amendment.
All right, is there a second? All right, we will approve this amendment by universal consent. Is there any objections? Seeing none, this amendment is approved. Accept all changes. Okay. So then, are there any further amendments or discussion on the resolution? Yes.
Well, at the end of the last whereas clause, my name
somebody there for?
On the same line as the okay.
Space, yeah.
Okay, and we'll include in this putting respectfully submitted as lowercase s. Okay. Become, okay. Become involved in development and implementation of action statements following graduate proof, blah, blah, blah. GPCI, everyone remembers it. Okay, so these grammatical changes, we'll bundle those as one amendment. Are there any further grammatical changes now? Let's just get all these out of the way. Grammatical or other formatting issues, one amendment. Okay. Probably, yes. Semester continuing the precedent established by President David J. Scorton. Okay. Any further grammatical corrections? Typeface. Everyone likes this font. Okay. Is there a motion to approve the... What? Yeah. There's a comment there.
We have to call the vote.
Well, first we have to approve the amendment. So there's still the amendment of the current grammatical changes. So is there a second? All right, we will approve by unanimous consent. Are there any objections to the amendment? Hearing none. We accept all those changes too. Okay. So.
Move to call the vote.
All right. There is a motion to call a vote. Is there a second?
Yes.
All right. This will be a vote by roll call. So please, all voting members who are in favor, raise your placards. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. That's 12 in favor. Are there any objections? Or any voting against? None. And any abstaining? All right. So that is 12 in favor with one abstention, and therefore the resolution passes. A nice quick save, and now it's official. All right. And this will be, of course, sent on to President Scorton, and I'll forward the... And the finalized one will be uploaded to the Assembly's website so everyone can see it there. So, with that... We now move into open forum. Is there any further business to be brought forward this assembly?
I have a small announcement.
Yes.
She's a postdoc with the Investigative Biology Project, is doing a workshop called Linking Up Students in Biology Classes, which teaches active learning techniques. She said it would be very good and engaging. And that is Wednesday, October 15th from 4 to 6 p.m. And I will make sure that somebody passes this around via email or Facebook.
Okay. Oh, yes.
Am I allowed to make an announcement?
Of course.
Okay, this is an announcement about the effectiveness of this group. Remember 2 weeks ago when you said it would be nice if we could have a space to come and talk about tech status? And tech obligation of graduate students. Some of you, I think, said it during the session, and a couple of you talked to me afterwards. So tomorrow at 3 o'clock in Willis Strike Memorial Room, we have an accountant coming to talk of exactly what I said. He's going to talk about the tax obligations and tax status of residents and non-residents, so U.S. and international students. And I don't know how many of you are available to come tomorrow at 3. I hope you can. But we'll try, if there's the need, we'll try to get him to come back in the spring, preferably, please say that word to me, before April 15th. but we can't promise we can get him back, but he's speaking tomorrow at 3 o'clock, will it strike somewhere else?
Will the material be available?
Will what?
The material, like...
He's going to have a PowerPoint, because he asked you know, for the equipment. And so we'll try to get a copy of the slide and share this somehow. I don't know how much information will be on the slide as opposed to cross compression. Oh, wait, I have things. Oh, you did send it to me.
Okay.
Maybe that's how we just plan on it. Because obviously, you can't file your taxes and then report to the IRS that you got bad advice from him, right? But then he'll answer your question. But in fact, when I talked to him just a couple of days after our last meeting, he said he prefers to answer questions one on one. So his presentation is going to be a short one. And then he's going to, you know, 20-minute presentation and 40 minutes for questions. But he's also going to be available. Now, this is part of the Fall Financial Literacy Festival you may have heard of. He's also going to be available from 1 to 3 at a table, just answering the different questions. Then he'll do his presentation at 3. Then after that, he'll go back to his table for about 30 minutes if you can only come, you know, a little before 4. How many of you plan to come on? Well, we hope to have a good turnout because I think it's great that he's offered to do this.
Okay. All right. Any other business to be brought?
I'd like to make this talking information on as you get the different from the university test to the university test. I think one of the big things we've been talking about over the last year is the sustainability of TCAT and how to achieve it. It appears that there has been a level of understanding reached between the university and TCAT. The details of this understanding have not been fully disclosed to us. They will be disclosed first to the board of directors of TCAT, and then it will come to us. But the language of the announcements suggest that the concerns of the community were met. I don't know what those concerns were. I will let you know as soon as I have more information on that.
I can just provide a tiny bit of information about last year's concerns in the community. So, basically, as many of you, especially if you're first year students know, you get a free bus pass for a year when you first show up. In addition, Cornell has an agreement with TCAT where they help to subsidize a substantial portion of the operating budget for that organization. And so what it's basically come down to is that TCAT is asking for more money from Cornell, which Cornell, for a long period of time, has been hesitant to provide. So it came down to raising maybe fares or the price of things like the Omni Ride that many people would use, as well as getting rid of that full first year free bus pass for students. And so this is what the negotiations are about.
I mean, most of that was in the grants.
Yeah.
I did have the numbers on what it cost versus how much it cost TCAT. And I think they're asking for $740,000 more, which sounds like a really good deal. I've asked for documents specifically regarding what the TCAT are, why there's a shortfall, what the registered statistics are. I will be getting back information from the Assembly Department of Schools and from the other chair, but I just thought I would give you guys that. I actually understand it.
Yeah. Any other items to wrap before?
Move to adjourn.
So adjourn in a second. All right, we are adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.